Welcome to Big Blend Radio, where we celebrate variety and how it adds spice to quality of life. Welcome, everybody, here to Big Blend Radio. Today, we get to chat with former U.S. intelligence officer and award-winning author of the Abel Archer series. And we're very excited because his second book is coming out. It's called The Righteous Arrows, and it comes out April 16th, 2024. And you can pre-order it now from your favorite place like Amazon, etc., or go right to his website, brianjmora.com. So welcome to the show, Brian. How are you? Normally, we just introduce people by their website names, apparently. So, hey, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Lisa. It's great to be with you.
You know, I've got to go into, you know, when people say, oh, you've got U.S. intelligence officer, are you nervous? And I'm like, just a little. You never know what they're going to dig up. But no, I'm just kidding. But what led you, I want to kind of go backwards a little bit because you've got the second book coming out. For those, I know you've won a number of awards with the very first in the series. But what led you to start writing? Have you always written? Did you have this in, you know, during your career? Because I know you worked at the Pentagon. You've done so much in your career, and everyone is going to be on Netflix too. So we're going to talk about that. But what led you to say, I'm going to write and do a fiction.
Right. Yeah. I had thought about writing about my experiences, especially the experiences that underpin the Abel Archers, for some time, and actually friends over the decades had suggested I should write about it and my personal involvement in some of the events of the 1980s. I was not able to do so, however, for two reasons. One, I was pretty busy with a full-time career, and then secondly, many of the facts that are really germane to the books that I write were highly classified, and I had to wait for the U.S. government to begin declassifying documents. And in fact, all of my books in the Abel Archer series are reviewed by the U.S. government and the Department of Defense and the intelligence community, and then they're approved by those agencies before I can publish them. So part of it was classification. I didn't want to go to jail, and I wanted to, you know, wait until such time as the government began declassifying some of the key documents.
When do they start declassifying? Is it always by a certain year, or is it by when it's safe and okay to do?
That's a very good question. Intelligence documents usually or always will have a declassification kind of notice on them, depending upon the level of classification. But that, even that doesn't necessarily mean they'll be declassified on that date. And usually that date is decades in the future from when the document was created. In the case of a lot of the documents associated with my first book, with the Abel Archers, those were declassified around 2015, and they were declassified after a lot of effort by people from George Washington University in Washington, D.C. There's not necessarily a set formula for when and how things get declassified. And a lot of it has to do with people asking for the documents to be declassified and being persistent about it.
Yeah, because that's what's always interesting to me about, even now when we're watching what's going on in the world, you know, Ukraine, Russia, we look at China, all these different things happening, even Afghanistan right now, right? We're watching the news or, you know, reading papers, and it seems like we're all just arguing about stuff. And I go, do any of us even know what we're talking about? You know what I mean? And I feel really weird about it. You know, before we were recording, I said, you know, I was raised most of my life in Africa, and you never really knew what was going on unless it's always difficult to know. And so is it different for you watching what's going on in the world now, looking back to your career Are you able to go, well, this is what's really happening? Do you think us as citizens actually get what's going on? You know what I mean, with the world right now? Do we really understand? Because it feels like we're not maybe, oh, I don't want to get in trouble. Maybe as much of a strong superpower as we used to be, you know, in maybe it's just because I was in a different country during different wars. Am I going to get in trouble for saying that?
No, I don't think so. And I think on that point, I think it's objectively true that in some respects, the United States is less influential and even a bit less militarily powerful than it was shortly after the Cold War ended in the early 1990s. And I think, you know, most people would agree with that. And part of it is that countries like China, for example, have gotten relatively wealthier and more powerful themselves. So you always have to assess power in a relative way, you know, relative to what. And as countries like China have gotten more powerful, and countries like North Korea have built up their nuclear arsenal, that has an impact on the relative power balance, if you will. I think, you know, one question you asked a little bit ago that I didn't quite answer for you, and I want to make sure I do. You asked, you know, why did I write fiction rather than nonfiction? And why am I writing fiction rather than nonfiction? There are several reasons, but one important reason is I wanted to write fiction so that I could imbue these books with my personal experience and observations, and also to humanize the stories and to both educate, like maybe a nonfiction book would do, but also entertain and have people enjoy the story and enjoy the human element of it while they're perhaps learning something about these historical events at the same time.
I think that's really important because I think that is the desensitivity that we get from watching the news. Things become numbers, and those things are actually human beings with families, with lives. And a lot of times we forget all these personal stories and all the people that are involved all the way through, like intelligence officers. You know, there's it's a huge, you know, craft of people. Let's talk about the Cold War because I feel like there's times where we kind of skip over it in our history. It's almost like, oh, that, you know, the Cold War happened and then it ended and people are like, what happened? You know, so I kind of sometimes feel like we you know, forgot, and it feels connected to me. I don't think it's over personally. I think it's still going. It's kind of like everything that's happening in the Middle East. It's a war that has never really ended, right? People are still fighting over the same things. So give us a little background on that and tell us about this Netflix special for folks.
Right. Well, the Cold War itself is a period in history that starts shortly after World War II ends, and the world began to be divided between East and West, between the Soviet Union and its allies, what was called then the Soviet bloc, and the United States and its allies, its NATO allies, and its other Western allies like Japan. And that period of time lasted from just after the end of World War II, so let's say the mid to late 1940s, until 1991. Most people put the end of the Cold War as c coinciding with the fall of the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union fell apart at the very end of 1991. So that's the period of time that we're talking about. Let's say from the late 1940s to 1991, when people think about the Cold War.
That's long.
And the Cold War was characterized by rivalry between the Soviet bloc and the United States and its allies all over the world, really. And it included what we call today proxy wars, not direct conflict between the United States and the Soviet Union, but proxy wars. And some of those would include the Korean War in the early 1950s was a proxy war. The war in Vietnam was a proxy war. The Soviet war in Afghanistan in the 1980s was a proxy war. And that is the main subject of The Righteous Arrows, my newest book is that Soviet war in Afghanistan. So that the Cold War was not entirely cold. There were hot wars during the period of the Cold War, but there again was no direct warfare between the United States and the Soviet Union, thank goodness, because they were the two dominant nuclear powers in the world. And had there been a war between those two countries, it would have been devastating for mankind. So that's the other thing that characterizes the Cold War is this nuclear rivalry that existed. And Lisa, you mentioned the new Netflix series that I'm honored to have been part of making. And that series is going to air initially, its first episode will air on the 12th of March. So it's coming up quite soon. And it's called, if people want to look for it, it's called Turning Point, The Atomic Bomb and the Cold War. So it has a focus on the nuclear aspect of the Cold War, but it'll be a total of 9 episodes. And I'm going to appear in at least one, possibly 2 episodes. They're going to do one episode on the 1983 nuclear war crisis. So in any event, that's the period of time that we think about when we talk about the Cold War.
The nuclear war, that when we think of that, and I think about like North Korea, and it's kind of freaky. I had a gentleman who was in the Cuban Missile Crisis, and he was at the very end. He was the person who shook hands with the Russians on a ship. They were in the submarines, and the calls were made, and they went to say, okay, it's over, it's fine, what can we do? And they wanted bread and tea and cigarettes, I think, or coffee and cigarettes, bread and cigarettes, definitely. And he went to go and do it. And at that time, we had an airplane go over and drop some flares for lighting to take this photo of this historic event. And it was so shocking. And you've got to think about what they had gone through to even get to, I mean, the Russians went through so much at that time, and they get there, they're going to shake hands, it's all fine, but here's this historic photo to be taken, and the flares freaked out the Russians, and it almost began again. And I remember him saying that, Gary Slaughter is his name, and he in him saying it really it's such an important story, because if we don't learn from these things, like the nuclear war could have happened at that point. We could, that is something that can really devastate us. And I feel that we still have to be very aware of that. What do you think about? Do you think we need to be nervous about that possibly happening at some point? He wanted even the government to understand that, even today.
Even today. Well, and I'll be, yeah, I do worry about it. I am concerned about it. And if you look at the Cold War, we had two major nuclear flashpoints during the Cold War. One was the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962 that most people re remember, or at least have read about and or maybe seen movies about. And the other was the 1983 nuclear war crisis, which is the subject of my first book, The Able Archers, which most people don't know anything about. And that's largely because it was kept so highly classified for decades. And in terms of what that means for today, when I mentioned during the Cold War, it was characterized by this nuclear rivalry, mainly between the United States and the Soviet Union. Today, in hindsight, that looks like a relatively manageable, even though we had these terrible flashpoints that almost caused nuclear war in 1962 and 1983. It looked like a relatively manageable relationship compared with the situation we find ourselves in today, where Russia is still the biggest nuclear power in the world. The United States is second. China is embarked on the biggest nuclear buildup of any country in history. And by the year 2030 or so, China will have a nuclear arsenal that's equal to the United States and more modern. And then we have North Korea, which is has been on this building spree of its nuclear capability for the last 3 or 4 years. There's Iran that is poised for a nuclear breakout. Both India and Pakistan have nuclear weapons, and they're not very friendly with each other, as we all know. So the potential for nuclear conflict remains there today, and in some ways it's more complicated than it was during the Cold War because of all these different actors that have nuclear weapons. So yeah, it is something to be concerned about
It's
today.
complex. I feel like we need a map of the world right now, with everybody
Yeah.
going on, Tell us a little bit about you writing The Able Archers. Tell us about that story behind it, and even the title. I think that's something for us to understand as well.
Well, The Able Archers is the first book in my series of books, and it is, as I mentioned a moment ago, it's focused on the 1983 nuclear war crisis between the Soviet Union and the United States. That nearly led to an intercontinental nuclear war. I wrote about it because I think it's a story that needs to be told. I don't think enough people know about it. And therefore, if they don't know about it, they can't draw lessons from it for that may be relevant to today. And I think they are relevant to today. But I was a participant as a young intelligence officer in some of the events of that 1983 nuclear war crisis. And I've been encouraged, as I said a few minutes ago, by folks over the years to write about it. So I did. And the way I wrote it is as an historical fiction novel, but it's based on real events. And the way I wrote it is through the eyes of the two main characters. And one of the main characters is a young Air Force intelligence officer who's based on me. And the other character is a Soviet military intelligence officer who's quite a bit older than my character, much more experienced and so on. And those two characters are pulled through all of my books. So they are the same two main characters in The Righteous Arrows, which is the next book in the series. And in fact, The Righteous Arrows begins just a few months after The Able Archers ends.
Oh, cool.
And what you find at the beginning of The Righteous Arrows is that the nuclear war crisis is perhaps not quite over yet. And but the name of each of these books is very intentional. The Able Archers is a play on the name of an exercise, a NATO exercise that occurred in November of 1983 called Able Archer 83. And Able Archer 83 was the nuclear war phase of a larger NATO exercise that took place that fall. So the name is again kind of a play on Able Archer 83. The Righteous Arrows, that name refers to the advanced surface-to-air missiles that the CIA provided the Afghan rebels in their fight against the Soviet Union. during the Soviet war in Afghanistan. And some of the Mujahideen, which are the holy warriors of Afghanistan, some of them called these missiles the righteous arrows of retribution. So
Wow.
hence the righteous arrows, I thought would be a cool name for this book. And in fact,
Yeah.
on the cover of the book, which you have displayed there, you can see a fighter with he's got a Stinger surface-to-air missile system on his shoulder, and he's firing it at a
Wow.
Soviet helicopter. So that is a depiction of the righteous arrows, if you like.
Wow. You go from it's archery arrows. What's next? What's the next book? Because I know that you're not stopping it too. I'm right about this. I
Right.
know.
Yeah, the next book is called The Wall Breakers, Wall Breakers, and that is about the fall of the Berlin Wall
Okay,
and
wow.
the events leading up to it and the events surrounding it. Again, with the two main characters, and I should give you their names, I guess. The character
Yes.
who's based on me, his name is Kevin Catani. And he has a Celtic first name and an Italian last name, like I do. And the Soviet character, the Russian character, his name is Ivan Levchenko. And Ivan Levchenko is based on KGB and GRU. GRU stands for Soviet Military Intelligence. He's based on real KGB officers and GRU
Okay.
officers that I knew back in the 1980s, and he represents kind of a blend of the best characteristics of those guys, because I wanted Levchenko to be a sympathetic character, a character that you can that Western audiences can relate to. Not he's not an ogre. He's not
Yeah.
a stereotypical monster, and people seem to respond very well to that and that treatment of Levchenko.
I think that's important because, again, it reminds us that, these are people, people's stories. I
Yeah.
mean, that's what history is. History is, it's gossip of what people did, whether, war is war. That's a little bit further than gossip for God's sake, but it's still people, and I think that's important. I remember when the TV show, Madam Secretary was out, and
Yes.
I don't know if there was a Russian guy that, they brought, like, our government brought in this Russian dude. He was a soldier. He was a spy, but there was a relationship between them all. And then he turned. He turned, but there was still that relationship, So there was all these human elements. Even if you're supposed to carry out certain missions, there's these human elements and things too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it bringing these two characters has to be fun for you to bring that up. About. And I think what's so important, like you're saying, these lessons for me, I don't know everything at all about, every what, when you the way you put the it's brilliant because I think we tend to isolate every war and not realize how they're all connected in some way over many, many years. And, that's what makes really good, like a series is it's a saga that keeps going on. And that's the reality of wars. I mean, even just in families, you talk about Italian families having a saga, that happens. It'll go through generations, It's like and it started with one dude did something and it's still going today. It could be 100 years later, but it is really human nature at the end of the day, don't you think?
Yes, I do. And that is what I wanted to depict in all of these books, is these are human beings dealing with very, very difficult, in some cases, catastrophic situations. And most of them are trying to make the best of it. There are some people in my books that have nefarious motives too, but the two main characters are both guys that in this case they're both men, and they're both patriotic to their country, and they have But they also feel an obligation to the wider world, and in the case of the Able Archers, to try to prevent a global nuclear war, and in the case of the Righteous Arrows, to try to prevent that war in Afghanistan from spinning out of control into something larger. So there's it, these books do portray human beings in tough situations, making choices and making decisions. And I think one of the lessons of both of these books, both The Able Archers and The Righteous Arrows, is about human judgment and the value of human judgment and how important it is to preventing difficult situations from turning catastrophic.
Yeah, because we have a Military Monday show we do every first Monday, and we'll have to put you on a Monday show soon, quick. But the thing too, when I look at it is, you could be an intelligent, you could be fighting on the ground, you could be, in even the medical part of it. What if you are not agreeing with what you're being told to do? Like if you're, that's what can happen, right? In war, if you're the person on the ground and, somebody up here is going, hey, this is what you need to do, and you don't agree with it because you're on the ground seeing a whole, maybe a different side. Do you see that happening? I mean, that's what we always ask. It's like, well, what happens when there's a new president? And then what happens to everybody in the military when that occurs? And it has to be a little different. Like I mean, we've had presidential changes during wars. I mean, even now where we are, we could have a presidential change. Will that change what happens? I'm not going to be political about it all, but I mean, there's going to be, I think, and if you're on the ground and you're not agreeing, you kind of have to make those judgment calls, right, about how you're going to handle your mission.
Well, yes, and I'm glad you brought that topic up, because it's another theme of my books that these individuals, Kevin Kattani on the American side and Ivan Levchenko on the Russian side, don't necessarily agree with the policies or even in some cases the missions that they're given. They still perform their duty, but they are also people of conscience, and they speak their minds, and they speak their minds to their superiors, and attempt to guide their superiors in certain ways that they think are more likely to lead to peace than to war. And that's definitely a theme of the Able Archers, and it is to some degree in the Righteous Arrows as well. And questioning, in fact, the Righteous Arrows begins, as I said, just a few months after the Able Archers concludes, and the action takes place in Germany, just as the end of the Able Archers does. And this Soviet nuclear war crisis is not quite over, and Kevin Kattani is given a mission, a very dangerous mission, to go into East Germany, and he thinks it's reckless. He doesn't really agree with it. He questions it. He goes forward with it and does the mission, and it ends badly. So it teaches him something about perhaps how to handle such situations if he's ever confronted with this again. And Ivan Levchenko, for his part, he definitely questions his superiors, and he's more, as I said earlier, he's older and more senior in rank than Kevin Kattani. So he has a little more clout, but he also has a lot more to lose if he gets things, if he goes cross, if he gets, sideways with his leadership. So they're throughout these books, these men are constantly dealing with that dilemma. If I don't agree with something, And do I, and Catani, in fact, he struggles with, do I even stay in this business? Is this what I want to continue to do? And try to work things from the inside and try to, you know, perhaps make things a bit better from the inside. So yeah, they're both struggling with that very thing. I'm glad you raised that.
In your career, when you're like, there's some good language for it, but like sweaty palm moments when you're like, oh boy, we're doing this, and I know from the intelligence work I'm doing, I'm not asking you to name names or anything. That's why you write books. But where are you able to draw on those kinds of experiences of, I'm just going to call it sweaty palms, and watch my language of like, oh, this could really blow up. Because I do believe at times certain leaders of different, places around the world, some of them, I mean, I just know from living in Africa, like you could just do that one push and things could explode in ways you do not. There's an emotional intelligence that comes with this, and you could just say something off the cuff, stupid, and it could blow things up in ways that people's lives get lost, and I've seen things like that happen. So I'm not, I've things that just, like I use the word stupid, and that's not a word I like to use a lot, but I've seen it. And so I wonder about that in the intelligence and in regards to actual war, when you're sitting, I mean, you've got to have had those moments going, this isn't going to end well. And hopefully it panned out okay. Those are life lessons, man, in any industry too, right?
Yes, and I there actually is one episode that is, I think, germane to your question that I recounted in The Able Archers. I'm trying to think if there's one in The Righteous Arrows I could refer to, but I'll go with the one in The Able Archers for now. And that's when my character Kevin Catani is briefing the U.S. Secretary of Defense. And this is actually something that's based on a real event where I really did brief the Secretary of Defense just a few days after one of the biggest trigger event that nearly led to nuclear war in the fall of 1983. And the trigger event I'm referring to is when the Soviet Union shot down a civilian Korean airliner, KAL007 was its call sign, and the Soviets killed 269 people, including 62 Americans, including a U.S. congressman who was on the plane. That event nearly led to a shooting war between the Soviet Union and the United States in the days immediately following that shoot down. In any event, I did brief the Secretary of Defense. He came to Tokyo, and he disagreed rather vehemently with my briefing and with the conclusions that I was reaching, which essentially, to boil it all down, the conclusion that he disagreed with was I stated that the night of that shoot down, the Soviets were confused, they were paranoid, and they were, if not trigger happy, they were prone to shoot first and ask questions later for a variety of reasons that are described in The Able Archers. President Reagan, who was this man's boss, this was Secretary of Defense Weinberger, the Reagan administration's reaction to the Korean Airlines shoot down was to call it intentional murder. And Reagan called it the Korean Airlines massacre, among other things, and really stirred up world opinion against the Soviet Union. And certainly, I would never defend what the Soviets did that night, but it was not intentional murder. It was born of confusion and paranoia. And I got dressed down pretty well by the Secretary of Defense that day for speaking that conclusion. And it bothered me a lot. And to your point, exactly to your point, I think. And I had a conversation, which I recount briefly in the Able Archers, with the CIA station chief in Tokyo, who was present for this briefing. I had a conversation with him after the Secretary of Defense left, and he kind of gave me some advice and said, "You are right, but they make the policy. And you've got to understand, as an intelligence officer, what your job is to do is to give policymakers, decision makers, your best objective assessment of the situation. And then they're going to do what they're going to do. And if they don't believe you or think you're wrong or take issue with what you're saying, that they're going to do what they're
Do.
going to do." Yeah. And
That's why we have colorful language. That's just what I was saying. Because yeah, that's a hard pill to swallow. That's
Yes, and it was worrisome because I felt that the rhetoric coming from the White House was taking a very, very dangerous situation that we had in the fall of 1983 and making it worse. And that's not a political statement. I mean, and I was, and generally speaking, a supporter of President Reagan, so it's not, this is no attack on Reagan. But I think objectively looking at the situation, we had incredibly high tensions with the Soviet Union in the fall of 1983, and then later in the Righteous Arrows in Afghanistan in 1986. And our policies exacerbated the situation. They didn't tamp it down. They were amplifying the crisis, and to the point where it could have ended very badly for everybody. But it didn't, thank goodness.
the policy things, when we lived in Kenya and South Africa, in Kenya, we'd get sanctions put, America would put sanctions, and they never did anything but made things worse, actually. And it was bad for the people, for any American citizens there. But people are like, oh, you're expats, screw you, when you're over in a different country. But there was work Nancy, my mom, was doing over there for wildlife conservation, and that's why we're there. But it was interesting to live through some of the policies that were made, and I didn't quite understand all of it as a kid, but later now can reflect on, like, whoa, like, if they, it the sanction thing, people think it's a it really has never worked. And it's not war, but it doesn't help. That's just, it's like you're not hurting the people that need to come to the table and fix things. You're hurting the actual people, and that's the hard thing when this country still does it. And people are like, oh, well, we're doing sanctions. And I'm like, that doesn't really always do that much. Hurts the actual people of the land, not the,
Yeah,
I think there needs
it
to be
is.
more conversations at times. And now the way the world is, I look and go, God, if we're turning things more politically instead of actually looking at real situations, that's how it feels, I think, for a lot of us. But just you're on that other side of, okay, here's the facts, and then the rest of us running around on the outside of things are going, well, this person's a Democrat or a Republican or this, so this is how things are. And I'm like, that's not a good feeling if we think politically, instead of welfare of all,
Well, I think that, yes, I think the lesson from that you're conveying is that these policies, these actions, including things like sanctions, have consequences. And some of those consequences, in some cases, the majority of those consequences may be unintended. You may be hurting the people that you don't intend to hurt. And that's been one of the criticisms more recently, excuse me, of U.S. sanctions against Iran. And that these sanctions, to your point, don't hurt the people making the policy. It hurts the people who are living there. And so, yeah, and I think in the war in Ukraine, the sanctions that the United States and the European Union and others have levied against Russia, Russia has found ways to get around those sanctions quite successfully. And so that kind of economic warfare tool really ought to be, in my view, should be reevaluated in Washington and reassessed for its real efficacy. Because those economic sanctions are a form of economic warfare. How well are they actually working? And
It is warfare. You're right. It's economic warfare. It's something to think about because people just go, oh, we're just lightly doing something. I'm like, no, I've been on the other side of it. It sucks. You know, there were times where we were using band-aids for tires, on your tires, like literally, no joke. But it also ruined the economy for America too, because places pulled out, and it doesn't just hurt the country that's getting the sanctions, and a lot of times it also hurts the states in different ways, different manufacturing and all that kind of stuff too. I do want to ask about, here when things are getting declassified and you're able to write about them, but still have to get all this clearance. Did any of your fellow intelligence officers and people that had to read your books, did you get any interesting comments from them? Like, oh, did you have to put this in? Or, what was the feedback like from that going around? I know they're reading it for, factual reasons, what can be out and what can't be out, and those important things. But did you get feedback from that community in regards to the books themselves as novels?
I did get feedback from my case officers on the books as novels. And the case officers are guys that work in the Pentagon in the Office of the Secretary of Defense. And I would they wouldn't volunteer a review of the books. I had to pull it out of them, but they all liked the books, and in fact
Good.
really liked them. In fact, one of the case officers who worked on both The Able Archers and The Righteous Arrows, when I asked him how he liked The Righteous Arrows, he said, "Well, I really love The Able Archers, but I like The Righteous Arrows even more. It's written so well, and it's really great." He said, I served in Afghanistan, and I felt like I was back there
Oh, wow.
in this book, even though it was the Soviet war in Afghanistan and not the war that he fought in." But yeah, and I think to your point about unintended consequences of sanctions, I'm going to speak of unintended consequences in relation to the Righteous Arrows, because that is one of the themes of the Righteous Arrows, that the United States and others supplied the Islamic resistance to the Soviet presence in Afghanistan. We supplied them with a lot of weapons, including some advanced weapons like the Stingers, the Righteous Arrows of retribution. And we really, my character, Ivan Levchenko, the Russian character in The Righteous Arrows and the other books, in The Righteous Arrows, Levchenko warns Katani, "You guys are opening Pandora's box by arming and militarizing these societies. And there are going to be unintended consequences. Yes, you may even defeat the Soviet Union. You may even hurt us to such an extent that we withdraw from Afghanistan," which they in fact did in 1989. But his point was, you're going to create the conditions for armed Islamists to
Oh,
spread. They're not
yeah.
just going to stay here in Afghanistan. We're going to be troubled by them in the Central Asian republics of the Soviet Union. You may be troubled by them in other regions. So you guys really need,
You're funding more people than you think.
you're creating a militarization that may bear fruit that you had not intended. I mean, that's
Because
essentially
that,
what.
so it could lead to radicalization with other groups. So,
Yes.
yeah. Wow. And we'll, our first Monday show, we do with Mike Guardia. He's a military historian and author of, I think he's up 20 something books now. And he pretty much documents different soldiers and generals' lives. And he's a U.S. Army veteran, and teaches. And he's written books. And like, I had no clue I was ever going to have this kind of education, but I dig it. It's like, you know what I mean? Because this is not what they taught you in school, right? And when I went to school for, but he's done books on F-14s, F-15s, like all these different, tanks and all kinds of stuff that I had no clue about. And one of the things that always blew my mind is like he tells the stories of how I may be wrong on which one, if it was the F-14 or 15, ended up giving them to like Iran and to different countries. Even so, Russia's ended up with some of our armor over time. Like, why is that happening? I'm still racking my brain because at some point, don't our own weapons end up being pointed at us in a way?
Well,
That's why the first thing went to my head when you were talking about that with the with you know if we're helping to arm someone eventually. I know things have progressed so much in weaponry now, and everything's so digital. We got lasers, we've got so much more now, but if somebody doesn't have a lot, they could end up with the older weaponry, right?
there's always a worry about proliferation of weapons. It's a key concern of the US government and our allies. It's one of the reasons that there was hesitancy, even in the first year of the war in Ukraine, to supply the Ukrainians with some of the advanced weapons. There was worry that the Russians would get their hands on some of the weapons that we were sending to Ukraine. So yeah, it is always a concern. It's always a consideration in weapons that are supplied overseas. In the case of Iran and the F-14s, the F-14s were supplied to the Shah of Iran when he was in power and his government, and then
That's
of course
right.
he was deposed, and a new government comes into power, the Islamic Republic government, the Ayatollahs, and now they have those F-14s. So it's sometimes you can't predict what might occur in these countries if there's a regime change and the like, but it probably proves your point that you need to be quite careful about where these weapons go. And one of the things that happened in Afghanistan and the Soviet war in Afghanistan is that was really where Osama bin Laden got his start. And although he and his Arab fighters that he brought with him from the Arabian Peninsula, they didn't really have much impact on the war against the Soviets. They told everybody they did, and he used it as propaganda. He claimed, Osama bin Laden claimed that he defeated the Soviet Union, and if he defeated one superpower, he could defeat the other one, meaning the United States. So a lot of the groundwork for 9/11 and for the post 9/11 wars, you really trace it back to the war in Afghanistan, the Soviet
Wow.
war in Afghanistan.
We had an author, Craig Mullaney, on, and he served in Afghanistan, and he wrote a book and his memoir, and he was adamant that we should have stuck around. And this was, we interviewed him, I'm going to say about 15 years ago. It was a long time ago. And he was adamant that Afghanistan was like a crucial place for us to be. And to that, it, he just, he was like, we, they were doing a lot of things like, helping building farms and villages and nice humanitarian things. But he was adamant that stuff was going down more than what we all knew. I don't know, but he was very adamant. Like, and I always think about him now about what, how, how everyone left and all those orders happened. And he must have been freaking out a little bit because he just felt like that was like the breeding ground of what was going on.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it certainly has been. And
Yeah.
yes, I
Wow.
just,
So go ahead. I was going to ask, what the next one after your arrows, we go from archery to arrows, and then you're going to break walls, the wall breakers. I just want to know, is David Hasselhoff going to be in your book?
Wow, I hadn't thought of that, but
Because,
maybe we could.
as a kid, he was always like, I took the wall down, and I'm like, please don't, you
Yeah,
did
yeah.
not.
He's not in the Wall Breakers, but I will give a little preview to those listening that I do introduce a new character in book number three, which is the Wall Breakers, and that's a KGB lieutenant colonel named Vladimir Putin. And because
Oh.
Putin was in East Germany when the wall came down. And I have Levchenko actually working with Putin in book three.
Wow.
And yeah, and so Putin is introduced there, and then Putin is a character in subsequent books that I'm going to have in the series as well.
Whoa.
So
You're not stopping on the series. This is like full steam ahead.
yeah, I'm going to continue. I've got four books, including these two that we're talking about today, The Able Archers and The Righteous
Wow.
Arrows. I've got another two books that are
So we should start at
basically.
the beginning. We should start at the Able Archers from the beginning since it's going in that series of time. I know you can write it
Yeah.
to start somewhere, but I feel like this is one of those that you're, it's that family saga that you want to start at the beginning.
I think you do. I think it's a little bit like the Harry Potter series,
Yeah.
where you'd want to have that background. I think folks can read The Righteous Arrows without reading The Able Archers and enjoy it. In fact, I've sent The Righteous Arrows intentionally out to people to read who did not read The Able Archers to get their reactions, and the reactions have been great. So I think you could pick up The Righteous Arrows. There are references in The Righteous Arrows back to the Able Archers, and I've tried to make those references such that, people don't absolutely have to have read the Able Archers to get them. So,
Okay.
but yeah, I think ideally you would want to
Yeah.
read them in order. Yeah.
Now, do you want this to be like a Netflix series?
Well, the Able Archers actually was optioned by Legendary Entertainment to make a TV series from The Able Archers. And we're still trying to work that deal and, actually get a production team going. That hasn't, everything got delayed because of the writer's strike and the actor's strike in
Sure.
Hollywood last year. But yeah, Legendary Entertainment bought the option back in the fall of 2022. Is when
Okay.
they so we're yeah we're still we're, they we're hopeful. There are a lot of people in Hollywood excited about making it, and not just the Able Archers, but hopefully each one of the books into a
Yeah.
series, because they neatly kind of, you could do one season of the Able Archers, and then the next season could be the Righteous Arrows, and you have the same two actors, or pardon me, not actors, but the same two main characters throughout each one of the books.
That's cool. I like that. Do you
Yeah.
talk to your characters when you write? Do you talk to them or do they talk to you? Do you
They
go
talk
through
to
that?
me. Yeah, they definitely talk to me. That's a good question. Do I talk to them? I don't consciously talk to them, but they definitely talk to me. And they tell me, they oftentimes tell me what they're going to do next. And
Ah.
yeah.
That's the fun part of writing. People may think you're nuts if you start talking in the middle of the night, to the computer, talking back to your characters. No, I don't think so. I'm going to do this. No, I want to do this. That's a fun part. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show here today. I'm so glad you came on and excited about you doing a whole series. Everyone, brianjmora.com. That's Morra. Brianjmora.com is a website you want to go to. And as I was saying at the beginning, April is when the book comes out, April 16th, 2024. That's when The Righteous Arrows comes out. But if you want and you have not got the Able Archers yet, well, you know what you need to do. So get prepared. You can pre-order and also watch out for Brian being on Netflix. What's the series again for Netflix so people know?
Yes, it's called Turning Point, The Atomic Bomb and the Cold War. And it's debuting on March 12th.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio. Keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com.